Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Farmer Sense Podcast. I am your host, Rick Willard. Andrew Fuff is my beautiful co-host, great guy. Get to know him. He is married, though, so don't get to know him that way. But
yeah,
good guy either way.
I know why you call me beautiful today. It's because I have my Willard Farms hat on.
Willard Farms, 1882.
Yep, that's why. That's why you call me beautiful today.
I'm wearing nice. Bright Yeti.
You are wearing the Bright Yeti hat today.
An eggmarket.net t-shirt. So
you're repping today.
Yeah. Bright Yeti is about probably the only one that, well, eggmarket.net gave me a backpack that I use all the time when I travel. That was pretty nice. And of course I work with Brian Split. So how could you, I mean, that's like giving me $1 million just saying here. Right,
really, I like it.
Yeah. And Bright Yeti's been more than good to me.
Yeah
awesome. So no complaints. I'll wear whatever, send it to me.
Yeah, you will.
Yeah. Send me some free stuff, people. So our email, in case people are wondering, it's farmersense1@gmail.com, the number one. So farmersense1@gmail.com.
Who had,
send me your address.
Who had farmersense@gmail.com?
Me.
You have that one?
Yeah. What one do you have?
Well, I don't have farmersense1. I mean,
yeah, that's what it is.
I know, but who has the one without the one?
Oh, I think I screwed it up and had to redo it or something. Oh, don't judge. Don't judge.
No, I'm just right asking. I didn't know. I'm like, okay, who had the first? Who's the OG?
I get it. I'm who's sorry. Yeah. No, I get it. Who had the first one? And maybe there was one, honestly.
I don't know. But
all I remember is I had to put a one on. So
perfect.
But
whoa, riveting information like that.
The people that subscribe have to send their name.
Yep.
Your address. And if you want to send us something to wear or whatever to promote your farm, your products, whatever, send us $10,000 and a t-shirt or a hat.
Wow.
Or I'm good with just a t-shirt and a hat as long as it's a Richardson hat.
Yeah. You are particular on your hats.
I am. I used to be all about legacy hats. I was like, I just pushed, like that was the hat. And legacy makes like a structured hat now, just like this. Farm Credit Services hat I have is that way. But if you want like the low pro, go with legacy.
Mm-hmm.
If you want the structured look, Richardson 112 or Richardson 115s, they're structured a little bit lower. And I found out about another Richardson one. I got it from a friend of mine in Illinois, Ben. It has like a rope around it, like the old school. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, and it's kind of pointed in the front, but it's like a low pro floppy hat. Oh, great hat. I should have had it on, but.
Next week.
Yeah.
You'll have the floppy sure. hat on next week.
Yeah.
I'll ask for it.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
But so what have you been up to? I'm rambling. Sorry.
I'll say, what have you been up to? I see you got your Monty's plant food thermos too. I mean, geez.
James brought me that today. He's my new district guy.
Yeah.
Real good guy. Very knowledgeable. So yeah, if you want Monty's plant food products or Phycoterra source, hit me up.
And this guy's a dealer for everything.
Kilbro's seed tenders.
There you go.
Loveland products.
Yep. I called him this morning asking if he was a dealer for liquid fertilizer meters and chemtote meters. And he goes, well, not anymore. So now I've got to find one somewhere else.
Farm Chem
is what he told me. So
yep.
Maybe we need to get somebody from Farm Chem on here to talk about all the things that they do.
We could talk about all the back ordered products they have during the spring.
Oh, I don't know. Probably I've never dealt-
said that out loud, but no, they, everything I've wanted so far this year, they've had the last couple of years. And I know It's COVID related. I don't think it has anything to do with farm camp because they've always had everything, and I'm sure it has.
Oh yeah, there's always been COVID distribution over it.
Yep.
Issues the last couple of years.
Yeah, so,
for sure.
But yeah, cam's only like 12 or 15 minutes from me, which is really nice. So if you don't want it shipped to you, ship it to me or come over. We can, like, if you want to visit the Willard Farm, come to Willard Farms and we'll take a trip to Farm Cam and pick up your product.
Perfect.
Whatever.
What's the fee on that? Are you going to charge the same fee that you charge me when I come?
No, you just got to listen to Ava whine in the back seat the whole time because she gets so excited about all the cars.
Oh, so they get the free trip and I have to pay to come see you. I see how it is.
Well, they'll have to pay too.
Oh, okay.
You only have to pay for gas. Uh-huh. Most of the guys probably have to pay for fuel.
That's true.
There is a difference.
I don't have a big boy truck, I guess.
Oh, that's okay. I drove so last week I went around with Jacob from Bright Yeti. Yeah. And he rented a Dodge Ram with a Hemi in it, 3/4 ton.
Yeah.
I was pleasantly surprised, actually. I was
gasser or diesel?
Gasser. Yep. It was a Hemi. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
So, yep. Yeah. It was a six something liter, but I was like, wow, the tranny didn't fall out from underneath it.
Well, that's a bonus.
Yeah. And the interiors in them are great. We have a Jeep Cherokee. They have beautiful interiors, sort of Dodge pickups. I mean, I like them anyway. Nothing against the other companies. I got a Chevy, but it's old. It's a 2007, so it's got holes in the floor, and I have to use my feet to make it move.
Yeah, well, going green, I see.
Yeah.
It'll help with your carbon index score on your continuum ag stuff.
It already did, actually. What'd you do this week?
Finished strip tilling, which was finally nice to be done. I learned a lot of things not to do again. So
some custom.
Yep. Custom strip tilling. Yep. Okay. No, I had, let's see, on Saturday, I was like, going to go down. I'm like, Carla, if you follow me down there in the pickup, I'll have the pickup down there. So if I need anything, I got all my parts with me. You know, I had to go 20 miles or whatever it was south of my farthest south farm. It's like, if you go with, I won't have any problems. I was wrong.
Mm.
I was going to do 65 acres or whatever for a guy because we were trying to beat a rain. It was going to be what's going to corn and some corn on corn. And I don't know if it was fines that were in the truck, but it plugged up my meter rolls. And so when I couldn't get the thing calibrated with the dam, I had to keep calibrate. Finally got it calibrated. And I went out and started, and I'm like, this just isn't right. My front meters are different than the back meters on my strip till. And I've never had my front meters having to go faster than my back meters to get the same rate out of each one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like double what my back one is. And when I'm supposed to be putting on the same pounds, I'm like, what the hell is going on? All of a sudden I had one row that didn't have any fertilizer. So I stop, I walk back there. Every line is plugged with fertilizer because I don't know if it would knock some of that powder out. And then it just shoved a ton of product.
So, and you don't know how long this was going on?
Oh, I made it. I made it about 300 feet.
Okay.
Before it plugged it.
Okay.
Yeah. I made it super far.
That's like a planter though, too. It has, you know, it's got a foot to fill up with seed in the tube, or that's how a red planter is anyway. And then all of a sudden you're 150 feet and it's going off. But sucks.
Oh, I mean, it was the you big
check.
Huh?
You have a check.
Right? Yeah. Well, no, I went back and redid it.
Oh, well.
I don't want to do that to anybody. I wouldn't do that to myself.
Sorry. I forgot you were custom. Yeah. But
I'd still do it to myself.
I would have doubled up too.
Yep. I mean, it wasn't very big of an area, and who knows how much was actually on there. So anyway,
I always tell the co-op, like, if double it up. I mean,
don't be short.
I'll pay for the extra fertilizer.
Yeah.
I mean, just let me know that you did it.
Yep.
I don't want to find out. Say, I mean, you could find out 2, 3, 4 years from now on the last 120, 100 or 240 feet of your farm that, yep. Oh yeah, they ran out. So they just didn't spread the last round or two.
Yep.
Like, and when you're soil sampling and like, mm-hmm. No, don't do that to me.
Right.
Always yep. Bring more. And if you have more, just use it up or take it to the neighbor. I don't, whatever.
Take it to the neighbor?
Well, there's a couple. Will you,
your neighbor. Just, you know what?
I probably wouldn't want you to take it to, but
Can you tell me who your fertilizer guys are? And I'll just say, Rick said he had some extra fertilizer. Just bring it down by the truckload.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. All right. You want to talk about our guests? Because we're rambling now.
Well, we're rambling because he only talked for 42 minutes. And we got a few minutes left, and there was something I was going to say, and now I forgot.
Web Western Wear discount code Rick10. How'd I do? Is that right?
No.
Damn it.
FarmerSense10.
FarmerSense10. So close.
Yeah. Close.
I just thought it was Rick because he's a 10 is what I was guessing.
Out of 100. Thank you.
Yep. Nope. So
I guess
go ahead.
I hadn't said what I even did this week yet.
I know. Sorry. What have you been doing?
Work. Got the planter, all the row units, the depth set.
Mm-hmm.
There was, and remember this, people. You got to set these row units because last year they were perfect. This year I went through it and there was 4 out of 32 rows that are different. So, I mean, it's a thing. You need to check them.
Yep. How much of a difference was there? Just
1/8 of an inch.
1/8 of an inch.
Yep. That's significant. That could be 12 hour. GDU,
yeah.
I mean, a few GDUs, 12-hour window, yeah.
Yep. Which that amounts to a few bushel.
Absolutely.
The can, I guess, for sure.
And then I just rearranged stuff, sorted, found out all the products I've had that are 2, 3 years old, sitting in my shed, want to use them up. It's that time of year where clean out the corners. If you got some old, I found some old boundary,
really?
Soybean pre.
Mm-hmm.
It's for you that don't know, it's a S metolachlor and metribuzin or dual 2-magnum and Sencor. And I found some of that and I found some leftover Matador S, which is the exact same thing, but then it has Pursuit in it. So that'll cover half of my soybean acres of what I found.
Wow.
So that cut down on some expense. And then, so it's good. Nice. Week. Dad and I, we worked hard. Yeah.
Yeah, good.
I've lost like 20 pounds.
Awesome.
And then I put it all back on with alcohol.
Huh. Maybe that's why I don't lose weight.
Ditto. Anyway, so Brian Split was our guest. There was a report today. We are filming this intro at about 6 p.m. on Thursday, the 11th of April. And there was a report at 11 a.m. this morning. It didn't amount to diddly squat.
Yeah.
So we're not going to release it tonight. We'll release it on the 12th at 10 p.m.
Perfect.
So.
All right. Well,
what?
Not that I don't talk to you every day. I guess I'll talk to you probably tomorrow about something, but.
Yeah. That's what I said that at the end of our interview with Brian. People will hear this, but Andrew and Brian are my best friends. It's like the only two people I talk to. That and Justin Abel, my Pioneer rep. He texts me a lot. We don't talk on the phone as much as we used to, but you guys are my besties.
All right. I like it. Like
every day.
I am so proud that you got the washing machine fixed for Amy, though. I mean, that made her day. That video, she was so happy. to be able to do laundry. I mean, that's how I knew you were a rock star.
I can't wait to see this video because I still haven't seen it. I'm sure it's great, but
it is.
No, I'm not the rock star. Yesterday I was like, that wash machine guy needs to come because I'm out of jeans. I only had three pair, and the pair I have on right now, they were a good pair, but now they're a work pair.
They've got demoted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, all day I was thinking, God, these jeans fit nice. I should have like three or four more pair of them. Yep. So if Cinch wants to Cinch Black Labels, they want to sponsor me. It could be because they're probably two sizes too big too.
Yep.
Anyway.
All right. Okay. Well, Brian Split with agmarket.net talking about the crop report today.
Yeah, he was great. And you asked some really good questions.
I don't know about that.
No, you really did. I'm glad you did. So
yeah. All right. Everybody have a good week.
Yeah. Everybody, please enjoy.
Hey, Brian, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Rick. How's it going?
Good. We're glad to have you again. Yeah, this time we got the video recording. Last time it was the first time we had used StreamYard and definitely had some issues with recording. So we'll be able to put this one on YouTube. So if you have any charts and everything, that would be great. I'm on location today. I'm at the farm. So right. I'm using my phone. But I said, wonderful to have you, especially after a report today. So maybe you could.
I do have some charts queued up. You can cut to those whenever you want. But, as far as what the report said today, corn actually had a reduction in old crop carryout by way of some demand increases. So a total of 50 million bushels, but trade was estimating a reduction of 70 million bushels. So it was, a reduction, but not as much as what the trade had expected. And so we did have a lower trade on the day, down 5.5 in May corn, and December was down 4.25. And on the soybeans, it was actually a more bearish report where trade was looking for a 2 million bushel increase to old crop stocks, and it was a 25 million bushel increase by way of reduction in demand. And we finished down 5.5 in May beans as well. So both products lower, but beans definitely taking a bearish report much better than corn taking a, maybe quasi neutral type of report.
Yeah, sorry, I made a facial expression earlier. It was at my dog because she was squeaking with a ball. I had to tell my dad to get Ava out of here. She kept squeaking, so hopefully he didn't hear that. But that was my pissed off facial expression I made earlier, just so everybody knows.
No, I heard no squeaks.
Okay, good. I'd love to have her on, but she'd be a menace.
They're hard to control. Other news in the market besides the report today, China did increase their estimate of their 23-24 corn imports by 2.5 million tons to 20 million. So a little bit of slightly friendly news there. CONAB trimmed their Brazilian corn estimate by 1.8 million tons based on a smaller planted area. And then 304,000 tons on soybeans due to some lower production estimates out of Mato Grosso. The Rosario Grain Exchange dropped their Argentine corn production by 6.5 million tons to 50.5 due to disease, which they are calling unprecedented. So that was released yesterday. And then today on the report, the USDA has their estimate of Argentine corn at 55. So very similar to beans in Brazil. CONAB is quite a bit lower than where the USDA resides on Brazil bean production. And they've also dropped their expectations of exports substantially versus where the USDA has the Brazilian exports. So This is right now the discrepancy between USDA and CONAB for both corn and soybean production as a percent is the biggest that we've seen in history. And those discrepancies have only gotten bigger year after year for about the last 3 to 5 years. So it's just interesting to see that. But they've definitely been reluctant in reducing the Brazilian bean crop anywhere close. I think they're about 9 million tons away from where CONAB is on beans. Other than that, China did cancel some wheat last month. We saw that there was a big string of wheat cancellations. And so now last week we heard that they were telling their importers to, you know, kind of pull back on importing corn in an effort to essentially raise their domestic prices prior to planting. And so we're starting to see some of the ramifications of that. They did cancel some Ukrainian corn, not a huge amount, it's about 300,000 tons, but you know, the market's wondering if we're going to see any additional cancellations. A little bit of a disappointing weekly export number for corn this week. You know, we've been running at or a million tons at that or higher, mostly week to week for several weeks. Last week was the first week was below a million, and then disappointing numbers today. So I don't know if that suggests that some of this business is going to be reduced in the next couple of weeks to months because of the you know, importers in China pulling back. And I don't know how long that they plan on doing that either, but that's really the kind of the pertinent news points today for corn and beans with the report, and then some of the other estimates that have come out from other agencies.
Now, historically, you said, you know, this is the widest difference we've had between USDA and CONAB. Do they ever start kind of coming back together later in the season, or do they just kind of stay apart?
The numbers for last year stayed apart. There was a period last year, and this is for the Argentine drought that we had that affected their bean production. So that's our most recent example. They were very, very slow to come down versus Argentina. There was a point where they bridged the gap somewhat, but they never went all the way down to where those private and other estimates. So there's a couple of different things. You have the Rosario Grain Exchange, you have Safra Sea Mercado. Those are kind of the two groups that are primarily going to be your Argentine production estimates, and then CONAB is your USDA equivalent in Brazil. And so it just seems to be generally the trend that Brazilian and Argentine estimates from their agencies go down much faster than what the USDA does. And again, very often that gap is still remaining at the end of the marketing year.
Okay. No, thank you. Because I didn't know. I've never really understood how to correlate those two together. And there really isn't a correlation, I guess.
The CONAB seems to be more accurate, or seems like they have more feet on the ground. Do you agree with that, Brian, or not?
Well, I would say they have more feet on the ground in Brazil than the USDA does. And even the USDA ag attaché to Brazil is quite a bit lower than where the USDA is as an organization. And I don't know how to explain those nuances, but I think that's part of the disappointment we've seen over the last couple of months of the USDA reports as far as it relates to the Brazilian production number. Is you would see CONAB come down, you know, 4 million tons or 5 million tons in 1 month, and Brazil would, or USDA would bring Brazil down one. They did 2 months in a row of 1 million ton reductions for the USDA estimates for Brazil, while CONAB, you know, brought it down 9 million tons or around that number over the course of 2 months. So definitely much sharper clip from CONAB than USDA. And I think you can express that. I was just looking for it here as a percentage. Let me see where that went. But again, this is just, again, CONAB versus USDA for the final soy and corn production for Brazil. So right now we're running 10% above CONAB on corn production for the USDA's number, and very close to 6% above CONAB on the bean number. Last year, the final numbers resided where corn was about 4% higher than CONAB for the USDA estimate, and about 5% higher on the soybean estimate. So, and that these estimates remain through the final production estimate. So again, that just shows that by the end of the marketing year, they still don't have to match.
Mm-hmm. All right. Awesome. Thank you. Are we trading weather in Brazil at all right now? Safrinha corn crop at all? Or is that kind of...
I mean, we are. It's on the radar. Right. But there's just not a major issue, right? So okay. This is the time of year where, yes, that's going to be an important factor. We just don't have a bullish input from that weather situation currently.
Okay. Because, I mean, at one time we were talking about it being so dry or something that maybe the beans were delayed.
And then, yeah, so, you know, those were things that we were talking about, maybe back in November, December timeframe going into the turn of the year when we were making highs. Mm-hmm. Those highs were made in November on the bean market based on the dryness that we saw in Mato Grosso. And then conversations were being had about, you know, does this push planting back on a portion of that or, you know, the replant beans that they had? What would that do to the second crop of corn being planting as far as the timing of it? Does it push it back to a period where we're more likely to see drought conditions? Just over the last several weeks, there really hasn't been a major concern about, the Safrinha crop. As far as weather goes. So, again, that can pop up at any time, but it's not in the forecast currently. And it's been similar to the Brazilian cycle where Mato Grosso was kind of the drier area and got relief. And then the southern regions were on the very wet side and then, you know, started to dry out a little bit. Not dry out, but, they were just getting a lot of rain, too much rain. And then that corrected itself into the end of the year. So it was kind of the pattern early for this Safrinha crop. It was drier in Mato Grosso, wetter down south, and then things balanced out. So right now it looks like the production there should be a pretty good size crop. So again, it is part of the market right now. That is the weather that we're trading in South America is that particular crop. And then of course we're going to be looking at things domestically as we analyze the planting pace and, you know, overthink that, but that's what's on deck for us right now.
Yeah. What did you think about the USDA planting numbers? I mean, that's what we're going to use going forward.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's what was that, week two of our estimates. So we're still extremely early in the process. I think week to week. So from last Monday to the upcoming Monday, we'll see a decent chunk, on corn plantings. And, but again, you know, right now, if there was a story, it would be, it is so wet, we can't plant, right? If there was some kind of a story happening, and that is not the case. Right now, I mean, this market has been going sideways for like the last month. And so, and maybe, you know, at the very least, that's a good thing. Are we going up? No, but we have,
we're not going things, down.
Right. We've kind of stopped at least going down, and we can show you when we get to that, what we need to hold in order to kind of at least to stay within this trading range. When you think about the month of February, for example, it was like, if there was no news, it was a big down day. Mm-hmm. And so now it's like, if there's a slow news day, maybe we're, you know, up a couple, maybe we're down a couple, but it's not that relentless selling that we had previously. Again, it doesn't feel great, but that is a small positive that we're just not going down when we do have a lack of bullish input right now.
Is there that much corn still in farmers' hands that the funds are not letting go of their shorts because of it? I mean, I haven't had corn for, I don't know, when was it, February? I haven't sold out everything forever, but what's the deal? I mean, come on, guys.
That was on the quarterly stock report. So that is part of that report, which is the one that we get the last day of the quarter, the last day of March. And that just showed that the percentage of corn that's still on farm and the percentage of beans that are still on farm, the percentage of the overall ownership is still, is at extremely high levels. And so that is going to keep a blanket on rallies because there is a lot of crop that still needs to be priced. And, we will still, I think, at some point get to a conversation. I mean, I haven't been doing this forever, but I started doing this in 2007. And every year at some point you get a conversation that just starts to price in what happens if the yield isn't the USDA trend. That conversation may not last very long, But in that period, whether it's May or June, you know, if you can get a week or two of that conversation to happen, I mean, we're, you know, we've been trading around, what, 470 corn for December for a while. So, you know, a 30 cent bounce from here, if we can kind of hold things together for a little while, isn't really asking a lot based on previous seasonal, you know, rallies that we would see for some kind of a, you know, a spring to summer high. So I think right now, again, it's just really important to hold the support that we've been holding for the last month plus.
Perfect. You want to pull up some charts, or do you have anything you want to talk about before we get into the charts?
No, we can pull up some charts. Okay. And, see what we're looking at here. Perfect. So this is May corn. And I guess one thing to mention is that we are going to be going into delivery on this particular contract at the end of the month. First notice day is May 30th. So anybody that's trading May corn, especially if you are long the contract, you have to be out by the close on Monday the 29th, or you risk being delivered on. And for anybody that's never been delivered on, it's not the end of the world. It's not like you have to actually take delivery of the corn physically. You have to re-deliver it. It costs you additional fees. You have to pay a night of storage and insurance on it. So, and then you get a 1099 for your proceeds from it, that you have to have your account offset with your what you took delivery on, the value of that. So it's more of a pain in the ass than anything. So just for, you know, people to be aware of how delivery works and when they do that.
Thanks for explaining that.
So the May corn, you know, this is basically, here's your March low right here. This is March 1st. That was the low for the month. And then it's, this line is drawn across to the low that we had post March prospective plantings and quarterly stocks. And actually what I did is I had this line from here, and I use the channel tool, which basically duplicates this line and then creates it at the same angle where I can attach it somewhere else. So here I attached it to this high, and you can see this peak is right there. And then the high, the day of that quarterly report, jabbed through it ever so slightly. You may notice that this other line right here is your downtrend from the October highs. That was a fall high. So I went and hit the downtrend. I hit kind of the overhead channel, and here we are just consolidating right now. So as long as we're holding this, on the low end, holding this particular low is a good thing to hold. Ultimately, I don't want to see us below the lows made in the month of March. Then that suggests we're going to contract lows or lower. But as long as we're holding this, then at least the sideways trend is intact. So to put it bluntly, below 420 bad, above 450 good. Everywhere else is kind of just noise in the middle. On the December side of things, still holding the uptrend. Well, it looks like we kind of closed right below it here today. This short-term uptrend from the February low to the report day low. That was the quarterly stock report. One thing I didn't mention, that is a negative sign for today, and these aren't always foolproof, but, we did this in the old crop corn too. You may notice that today's high was above yesterday's high. Mm-hmm. And then we closed below yesterday and the day before low. Mm-hmm. That is generally a momentum indicator suggesting that momentum has, in the short term shifted to down because of this. Closing below this isn't the best thing, but really I think this is the area that we want to hold on these corn. So 460 by and large, as long as we're holding that, we're still in this chop fest right here. You can make an argument where, if we recover immediately from here with this low is 65.5 and this low is 65.25, that would be a left shoulder, right shoulder. Here's your neckline. So that'd be a head and shoulder bottom. This is your head. If it did that, and again, it would have to recover immediately from here and then turn back up. It validates itself if it gets through these highs. So that's what would validate that is that type of bottom. And then that would project. So really all you do is you take the measurement from here up to here, which is 20.25 cents. And then add that to the high. So that would take you to, 501.25 for an upside objective. You know, your 200-day moving average is 98.5. This gap right here that it was from the last day of December to the first day of January is 503. So there's still viable upside objectives above us. I don't know what the story is or when it's going to turn. And hopefully, again, the more we can hold this sideways trading range and the longer we can, when there's a lack of bullish input, the better, because hopefully when we do get a seasonal reason to go up, it's from here instead of back down here or lower. On soybeans, a little bit more negative here. We had a pretty sharp run off of those lows. You could see we were in this downward trending channel, and when we got through it, we had a nice run. This was last week's low right here, this low. And so we took that out yesterday, had further lows today. We're in this downward trending channel, so it'll be interesting to see what beans do. We did recover off the lows, and you could see we closed right on that channel line. We traded through it and undoubtedly ran some stops. That didn't happen until the report numbers came out. Then we dropped, made that low, and then very quickly came back. So if we can hold this, I think we could see a bounce back up to here, just if it wants to stay orderly. If we tomorrow see follow through from today and find ourselves back below here on a closing basis, it's going to look like you're going to check contract lows at that point. So we, again, much like corn, we need to see this thing catch basically right here just to get a shot of going back up towards some short-term resistance. But the developments in beans here recently have not been good technically. Very similar in the November, we had a period where we had, this downtrend line off the highs. You had this downtrend line from this set of highs. So we kind of systematically worked our way through that, went here, got through these downtrends. So now this last low, this was the quarterly stock report low, was right at that trend line. We tested it from above, and then that created an uptrend. We held it until earlier this week, and then we fell through that. So now we did go back and revisit some previous support. This was an 1163.5 low. This is a gap here that was at 1163.5. You could see all these lows right here. So again, much like the previous bean chart, we dropped through it and then closed back above it. So we need to immediately recover in order for us to see a revisit of maybe some of the short-term resistance, which I would say is probably, up in this vicinity. You got a lot of these yellow lines that are all coming in the same area here if we do get a bounce. So that's probably going to be a tough, a tough area to get through unless there's a reason for us to do that. So again, bean chart not looking quite as good. Corn still holding the low end of its range. Beans gave it up here recently.
Is there anything technically that you're seeing that, I know that we're kind of just in channels here. Is it a report that's going to take it? Is it going to be on the fundamental side that changes it right now? Or is there some technical thing that might change it, the direction?
Well, the technical thing probably needs a fundamental input to make it do it, right? We're not going to get another report from the USDA until May. That May report is going to be the first time that the USDA gives us a new crop balance sheet, an official one. So we know the acres. Mm-hmm. We got that in the March report. We should know trend because they typically use the trend line yield from the February outlook form. So then really the variables that we don't know is how they're going to assess demand for the marketing year. And that's going to give us now our new crop balance sheet with our carryout estimate, our first official carryout estimate for the 24 crop, right? So that would be a potential input that could make, that's the next report. Otherwise, in the short term, it's probably going to require something firing up like we were talking about in the Safrina corn. Or some kind of a planting issue developing. Otherwise, beyond that, those would be the typical issues on a year-to-year basis for this time of year that would be a fundamental input outside of a USDA report. Other than that, we're going to have to look at some kind of a macro influence that we just don't know about yet, right? There's a lot going on in the Middle East. A lot of the headlines recently have been more about Iran and Israel because of the attack at the consulate in Syria. And so that would be something that could fire off at any point. And if there was something, you would think that that would affect the energy market pretty rapidly. I would think crude oil would run higher very quickly. That should support bean oil. energies as a whole typically have a correlation with grains, just because, again, corn for ethanol and bean oil for renewable diesel. So again, that may never happen, but you know, would it surprise you if, you know, one weekend something did happen and then you came out of, you know, the gates on Sunday night with crude oil up multiple dollars and they're just buying commodities because of that. So, but as far as typical seasonal inputs right now, planting weather, Safrina corn, and that may report.
Okay. I just didn't know if we'd really start focusing on the weekly export numbers, if that would kind of be now like the fundamental place to look.
Yeah, I mean, demand is always important. And we know that for soybeans, it's been a rough several weeks, or for old crop soybean demand. And also, we're really at a lack of a new crop book, right? So typically in a strong soybean program, we will already have quite a bit of new crop already on the books to China, and we just don't have that. So it's an old crop and a new crop issue right now on beans from the demand side of things. And on corn, you know, corn exports, like I said, have been recently very good up until, you know, last week was the first week in several that we were below a million tons. And then this week was another disappointing number. So, yes, I mean, week to week, we will, of course, look at exports. And I mean, but we know that. I mean, the market looks at that every week.
Right. I mean, it just seems like planting forecasts look really favorable for the Midwest, you know, domestically. I just didn't know if that it was going to be demand driven now, if anything did take hold, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, this is a multidimensional puzzle that we're dealing with every day, right?
Mm-hmm. It was just raining so hard here. I couldn't even hear you guys for about 30 seconds. Seriously.
What's rain?
You didn't hear what we said about you?
Good. Yeah. No, I didn't. Thanks for saying that though, Brian. I appreciate it.
Yep. Yeah, you know, and if we want to just kind of take a look at some of the big picture stuff here too, This would be continuous charts. So what are we looking like month to month? This is always a front month basis. And so there's been a lot of talk about comparisons to 10 years ago, right? You make these lows, 2010, here's your 2020 lows, right? Mm-hmm. 2011 peak, 2021, 2012, 22, 23 slide, right? Here's your 13 slide. Here's your 23 slide right here. Big drop, early lows in 2014, early lows in 2024, very close to the same price, within about a dime roughly. Interestingly, if you took the distance from this high here to this low here and applied the same distance on the corn chart, that would have suggested that we should have went to 389 and a half for the same exact distance. We went to 394 and a half, so within a nickel. So this is what we're waiting for, right? You could see we had two monthly highs, third monthly high, right? All kind of in the same area. And then on month four, we got through it, and then you had a good 3 months, right? So here you are, 1 month, 2 months. This is month three. So maybe we need to get through this month and what we were talking about, just not go down. And if we can do that and maybe close near the highs of the month, like we did on month three right here, then month four, which would be May, might give us a reason to go up. What is it? I don't know. But from a similar timing perspective, that would be where we're at right now. And hopefully we see a similar result where we can get a five back in front of corn and do some meaningful marketing, not only for this crop year, but in my opinion, also next crop year, because look at what happened when you fell off from those spring highs. You're down here at 318 and a quarter. So something that Rick and I have talked about, and just an idea of having another floor under the market, because we know what the chart's going to look like if we get through $4 here to the downside. This happened, this big move right here happened because we took out that early year low. Yeah. And so if we do that again and you take this low out, it's likely to lead you back down somewhere in that same area, right? Back down to this low end. So if you could get these corn back up to the 480 area, a $4 put, probably about a nickel. If you get back down to these prices come fall, this was a low that was made in October at 318 and a quarter. So, I mean, at that point, you know, that $4 put's worth 82 cents that you paid 5 cents for. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think that's just something, and this is not your hedge. That is not your floor. I don't want you to say, well, I've got $4 corn protected. I'm not going to sell it. No, this is kind of in addition to, because if you could see something like this, right, back up to somewhere around here, sell some corn at 495, whatever it is, you know, worst case scenario, you take a nickel off that sale if that put doesn't amount to anything. But if it makes you 75 cents and you can turn 490 corn into, you know, 565, or maybe you say 490 corn is good enough for this year. I need that 75 cents for Dease 25. Cause if we're at freaking 320 Dease, then you're probably at 370 Dease 25.
Yeah.
And now we're at a whole new, you know, level for next year's crop. And we better hope that inputs come down further. Otherwise it's going to be a major problem. So that extra 75 cents, you may need that for next year. And it's kind of the same thought process on the beans. When you look at these, you know, these similarities, right? This is downtrend, same years, just 10 years apart. So what we haven't had is that 2014, you know, run up, right? Same thing in corn. We're looking for a low where we can go up and make a high. And so on this particular chart, you look at where we were for a low in fall of 2014, it was 904 was our October low. So the same thing, if we could get a bounce back up towards like 12 and a quarter where we were not very long ago, I think we made a high up around 1216 and a half. An $11 put, you know, if we can get that for 15 cents, I mean, if you go down to this type of a price, that's going to be worth $1.96. So again, if I get a shot at selling, you know, 1240 beans up near the gap, there's a gap at 1244 and a half. Maybe I turn that into 12 and a quarter beans if that put doesn't turn into anything, but maybe that put makes you $1.80.
Yeah.
What? So yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so I have a whole bunch of reminders on my phone set for the year 2032 to start buying corn and beans because it's going to go up in 2033, right? I mean,
your alarm should be 2030. That's when we're going to be at our 2010, 2020. You had the pandemic in 2020. That's what brought us down to those lows, right? No one was going to use a commodity ever again. They were paying people to take their crude oil away from them.
Okay, 2030 then. I can change that. I still have time.
Okay, yep.
Yeah. Will interest rates affect any of this, do you think? Because I know that they were talking multiple reductions in interest rates and now maybe backing that thought process down.
I would say that the biggest immediate impact interest rates have had is more on the spreads. You know, just going to wider carries. This is May to July, right? I mean, this was how much carry we had. And as we get more comfortable with the size of the crop and then interest rates and the amount it takes to continue to hold grain, these spreads get wider and wider carries. So, you know, here is a thought process, right? So this is Dease 23 corn versus Dease 24. And this would have been, you know, this is already off the board, but we can see what it did last year, right, to glean some things. I don't know what these lines even are. Let's get rid of this. Prior to option expiration, got out to about 45 cents carry one December to the next. Before it went off the board, it went to 58. So right now, December to December is at 22. Okay, we're in this downward trending channel. Big picture, probably should go to 40 to 50 again. Now, that is also something to consider when you're marketing corn. You know, again, this is assuming we get some kind of a seasonal move up and get some opportunities to sell. But if you're thinking about selling some corn for Dease 25, and let's just say all things are equal, you've got Dease 24 corn at $5 and Dease 25 corn at $5. Do you sell Dease 24 at $5 for your Dease 25 sale, or do you sell Dease 25 at $5 for your Dease 25 sale? Now, there's an element of speculation in that question, because if you sell 24, you're selling more of the crop that you're growing right now that mm-hmm. you're not actually going to have. You'll have it next year. So the idea is, if I have them both at $5, me personally, I would rather sell Dease 24 as my Dease 25 sale, with the intention of rolling it to Dease 25 eventually when that carry goes back to 40 to 50 cents. So now if I sell Dease 25 at $5, then that's my sale. It's at $5. If I sell Dease 24 at $5 and then I roll it to Dease 25 when there's a 50 cent carry, now I'm at $5.50 Dease 25, right? You're adding that 50 cents to your price. Okay. So that would be something. Now, that you can't do that in your cash market. Your guy's not going to say, oh yeah, sell Dease 24 physically and then we'll let you just roll it to the year out. That's more of an account thing that you probably need to do that in. But I do think that that is a way to maximize next year's sales using the spreads to your benefit.
Awesome. Now, so apparently, I don't know what farmers you talk to, Brian, but none of them must be borrowing any money, because I mean, they're not selling any grain. So I don't get it. We've talked so much. I shouldn't say we, but I've listened to so many different marketers. Anybody that Jesse Allen interviews, always talking about what it's costing you in interest to hold on to everything every month. Why? I know the prices aren't good, but you know,
it's not as simple.
You can sell it and buy it back.
You're absolutely right. And if you just said, you know what, I'm going to sell my crop in, in fall, right out of the field, mm-hmm. And then just buy a future contract. The main difference is you're talking about the interest on the full value of corn at $5 or whatever it is, right? Yeah. Versus the interest on the margin on a corn future, and mm-hmm. it's a big difference, right? Talking so,
yeah.
You know, $25,000 interest on that, you know, just on a 5,000 bushel contract versus $1,500 or $1,800, right?
Right.
So that's definitely a big part of it. The other thing, though, but it's not easy, because some people just don't want to be in a futures market. They don't want to buy futures. They don't want to worry about putting margin money in, even though, you know, it's probably just part of what they're saving from their interest. But I'm not here to convince anybody to do something a certain way, you know, but there are opportunities to do it better. It's just that if you're open to thinking about, you know, new ways of doing it or different ways of doing it.
And I'm not telling people either they're idiots or anything, but I asked this question to make people think, you know, mm-hmm. like let's think about this, you know?
Yeah. There's a definitely an element of what is cheaper to own. If you're going to own the bushels, what is the cheapest way to own it? And, depending on what you're expecting for basis can be a big part of that. You didn't have to worry about this just a few years ago when interest rates were next to nothing, but now it's part of the conversation. So
it was easy marketing back then.
Yeah, I mean, money was what the money was, right? There wasn't a huge time element to it. So there is definitely ways of saying, all right, I'm going to sell it. I'm going to have some kind of ownership on paper. Maybe it's I'm buying a future. Maybe I'm buying a call and spending X amount on it, right? And so, you know, there's probably quite a few calls on people's equity runs out there that they bought for 10 cents or 15 cents. And they're going to say, you know, that was a waste of money. But that was also what made you sell corn when you did, you know, 50 cents higher than where it is today. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a lot of this is kind of like, you have to just account for all of it. Yeah. I mean, would you have been better off selling the corn and not buying a call? Absolutely. But you probably weren't going to sell the corn if you didn't buy the call.
Right. Yeah. And I thank you for that. I talked about it a couple episodes ago. I named you guys, you and Matt, just for keeping me in line, just being that, I don't know, somebody to tell you like, hey, sell it. I'll never forget. I looked it up again. It was June 23rd. Last summer when you told me to sell that, corn, I sold some 580 and 570, and I sold some for this next year for 505. And I was looking at that again here the other day, and I just wish I would have sold everything I had.
You know, I mean, that's how it is with trading in general. When it works, you can never have enough on, and you know, when it's not working, you know, one is too many. So,
yeah, I could have been pissed at you too.
Yeah, right.
No, actually, I wouldn't have. It was totally my choice. You called up, you made a recommendation, and it was my choice to do it, and I'm glad I did.
Good, good.
Yep. All right, so you mentioned basis. What are you seeing in basis on corn and beans right now?
It's generally been pretty strong in the Western Corn Belt for corn. You know, the Eastern Corn Belt had a record crop, so it's not the same story, and that's always going to be the case year to year. You're going to have your strong areas and your weaker areas. I can tell you that, you know, with corn input, you know, where it is as an input, corn for ethanol and natural gas being where it sits. I mean, we're what, at a $1.77 on the spot futures right now. So these inputs for ethanol plants are very good. So I would expect that you're going to continue to see ethanol running at a good clip, especially when you look at the other energy markets. You know, RBOB is your unleaded gasoline contract on the board, and it's been going up, you know, ever since the beginning of the year. We were, you know, if I look at this June contract, it was 2.25 to start the year. You know, now we're up at 2.75. So we've seen unleaded gasoline in the futures market go up 50 cents on this June contract since the beginning of the year. So I think that's going to continue to be a bright spot in, you know, areas that have the ability to see some competition from the ethanol plants. We need to see exports not drop off, to not have a general deflation in basis as a whole, you know, from a lack of export program. So hopefully this is one off on some of this weakness that we've seen in exports the last 2 weeks. I could tell you, you know, the thing that makes it tough to get too friendly about basis, you know, with the exception of certain kind of pockets, and you're probably gonna see basis pretty firm while we're planting, because everyone's planting, right? They're not hauling. Boy, I mean, if you're holding grain at the end of the summer, and we are in a bear market mode, and we're doing like what we did 10 years ago, your basis is going to be absolutely horrible.
Yeah. I didn't know if we should, you know, if we do get a run up, if we should be looking at some basis contracts, you know, in July part to lock in maybe a favorable basis. I don't know. That's.
Yeah. I mean, so the general thought is that if we're at a low level at some point here, short term, and then we do get a run higher in the futures, that you're likely to not see the basis perform well when the futures go up. So that would be the argument for making doing a basis contract off July. You just have to be aware that it puts you on the clock, right? And so, you know, you got to make a decision by the end of June. Mm-hmm. So you definitely have to be very vigilant in selling what you would be anticipating, because the whole reason you're doing that is you're anticipating that there's going to be a move higher at some point, you know, in May, June, just based on seasonal tendencies, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. I have that on my calendar.
Okay. Yeah. Hey guys, I got a jam here, but I appreciate you guys having me on
and
run my mouth for so long here and just
spend that was perfect out. No, that's the time we needed, so I was very happy and glad to have you on again, and maybe we'll catch up again here in another week or two. You two are my best friends. You're the two I talk to more than anybody on the phone. I just want you both to know that. So
thanks.
Yeah Okay, well, take care, Brian. Thanks again.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You too.
Bye.